My name is Chris O'Leary, and today is September 25th, 2019. And I was hoping to be driving to Notre Dame for an event this evening in which a number of speakers are going to be speaking about the Catholic sex abuse crisis and basically how to put it behind us, which I find offensive as hell, because and inappropriate. But I'm having a problem. I think I feel a migraine coming on, so the thought of being in the car for 12 hours driving to and from Notre Dame from St. Louis isn't exactly appealing to me. So I've decided to use the time that I would have spent driving to and from St. Louis to Notre Dame to talk about a number of mysteries that have puzzled me, and that I made a connection about yesterday, a connection between Timothy Cardinal Dolan, Peter Steinfels, who wrote a piece last year, about a year ago, actually, talking about the Pennsylvania Attorney General's, the Attorney General report into the misdeeds within the Pennsylvania, the various Pennsylvania dioceses, Catholic diocese, archdiocese, and some problems I've had with getting the New York Times to cover my story and how it relates to the involvement of Timothy Cardinal Dolan in the Catholic sex abuse crisis. So my story involves the Church of the Immaculata, which is located in Richmond Heights, Missouri, which is a suburb of St. Louis, Missouri. And I don't think a lot of people know this. They associate Timothy Cardinal Dolan with New York because he's been there for 10 years or so, but Cardinal Dolan is from St. Louis, and his first assignment straight out of the seminary was at the Church of the Immaculata in Richmond Heights, Missouri, a suburb of St. Louis. That was the summer of 1976, and I would have been going into the third grade at Immaculata, and my first memory of a priest was of then Father Dolan at Immaculata. So my first memory of a priest is of Father Dolan, you know, coming to our religion class. I think it's Mark 8, 22 through 26. Jesus heals a blind man, but he actually has to do it in two steps. And the lesson I took away from that was that everybody makes mistakes, including Jesus. Although there's some controversy about that. Apparently, I guess it's a Protestant thing that Jesus didn't actually make a mistake for that. But the lesson I was taught and that I took away from that was that, you know, everybody makes mistakes, including Jesus. Because Jesus was, you know, fully human. But for, you know, putting aside the doctrinal things, that's my earliest memory of a priest and my earliest memory of Timothy Cardinal Dolan, then Father Dolan, just, you know, a couple months out of the seminary. A year or so later, another priest came to Immaculata, a guy named Father Leroy Valentine. And Valentine was not, he was not a good guy. He was my abuser, and he abused a lot of guys. Near as I can tell, he abused almost everybody. Almost every boy he could get his hands on, literally. And the really horrible thing about that story is that then Father, now Cardinal Dolan, knew it he saw with his own eyes at least some of what was going on. And so it's still hard to talk about. It's just stunning that, you know, a priest, much less a cardinal, would see boys being groomed, abused, molested by a priest. That a man, a person, an adult, would see boys being abused by a priest and not do anything about it. It's mind-boggling. But it happened. And then what's worse is in 2002, then auxiliary Bishop Dolan, basically Valentine had been outed in the New York Times. Jody Wilgorin and Lori Goodstein wrote a piece in early March 2002 talking about how the three Scorfina brothers had talked about how Valentine had sexually assaulted, raped at least one of them. And that blew up in St. Louis, and then I came forward. They asked people who might have information to come forward. I came forward to Jennifer Joyce, the circuit attorney, and I also called the Archdiocese, and the next day, by then, Auxiliary Bishop Dolan, Bishop Timothy Dolan, by that time, called me back the next day. Hey, Chris. Tim Dolan, Bishop Dolan. How you doing? Been a long time. And I, you know, and we talked, and I, you know, the gist of my conversation, I had a series of memories that I didn't really understand. A lot of them were some of my most cherished memories because they were memories in which Father Valentine made me feel singled out and special. You know, the file header in my memory was special training. I've since come to understand that that's kind of a common way that predators get access to people is by making them feel special. But so I asked Bishop Dolan, you know, do you think this means anything? Do you think Father Valentine do you think there could be any truth to this stuff that they're saying about Father Valentine? And Bishop Dolan, without any investigation, immediately comes back at me and says, no, there's no truth to this. I know Father Valentine. We were at the seminary together. We lived and worked together at Immaculata for years. I know he didn't do anything he's accused of. I know he would never do anything to hurt a child. And that was enough for me. So Dolan told me nothing happened. And this is early March 2002. Dolan told me nothing happened. I didn't learn until recently that Valentine, because of at least two other allegations, Valentine ended up resigning at the end of that month. And I actually know one of the guys. I know the guy who forced Valentine to resign. Nobody ever called me back to say, hey, yeah, I know Dolan said nothing happened, but Valentine resigned. You know, so maybe your memories do mean something. Nobody ever made that call back to me, which sucks. But so I just, you know, I did talk to another psychologist. She told me nothing happened, that I was just misinterpreting what Valentine had done to me. You know, that he wasn't trying to abuse me. He was just overly enthusiastic. But by 2005, I had had a couple of, I was in, well, okay, so by 2005, yes, Dolan had told me nothing happened, and this woman, a second person, Nancy Brown, and I assume it was Nancy Brown, the assistance coordinator for the Archdiocese of St. Louis, she had told me nothing happened. So I had two people tell me that nothing had happened, but I had had these two strange events. So while... So I'm not stupid and I can connect the dots. And so essentially my older son made his first confession in February 2003 and I had a panic attack. And my older daughter made her confession in February 2005 and I had a panic attack. And these were completely out of the blue because I had put the Valentine stuff behind me. And while I had told Dolan and while I had told Nancy Brown about, you know, my story started with stuff that happened in confession and hugs and all that kind of stuff. I didn't have any specific memories of outright abuse, and Dolan and Brown both told me nothing happened. Here I am having these panic attacks. I'm like, what the fuck? You know, and one panic attack is one thing, but to have two panic attacks out of the blue, that's starting to look like a pattern. And at the same time, there was a Law and Order criminal intent episode called Eos Foros, I think, which is basically, it was a retelling of the story of Madeline Murray O'Hare, and there's basically... I think there's I guess it's her daughter or daughter-in-law, something like that. It's basically, Madeline Murray O'Hare gets whacked. And part of the made-up story is that her daughter or daughter-in-law supposedly gets kidnapped, and they bring her back to this room where she was supposedly held, and she's just, like, no big deal. And then the detectives are like, you know, we found your reaction to this room in which you were held and kidnapped, we thought that was a little strange, because normally when people are brought back to the room where they're held, they freak out, and you didn't freak out at all. And I thought that was, and that stuck with me, because I'm like, does that, okay, so the fact that I had panic attacks with, when I went to in both cases, my kids went to the dark, scary room side of first confession, and I went to the face-to-face side of confession. So does that mean that I'm having reactions to the face-to-face side of confession? So does that mean that something did actually happen to me during face-to-face confession, and that these memories of Father Valentine do actually mean something? But I didn't remember anything specific, although, you know, there was hugging, and the hugging went on for kind of a strangely, awkwardly long period of time. So I started wandering. So in September 2005, I contacted David Clossy of Snap and asked him if he knew anything about Valentine, if he knew if there were more people who had made allegations against Valentine. I don't think I followed up with him. I kind of danced around with him for a number of years. You know, like, I would call him and he would, or I would send him an email and he would say, yeah, let's talk. And I wouldn't follow up with him. I think because I didn't want to know the answer, actually. But then... So at the same time, this is like mid-September 2005, I sent an email to the New York Times reporters who broke the story about Valentine in 2002. And this is where Peter Steinfels comes in, because Peter Steinfels has a connection to the New York Times, because he was a religion columnist for the New York Times. And this is where things start to get strange, because the New York Times reaction to my story and my information about Dolan is strange. And I wonder if there's a connection between Steinfels' his regard for Dolan. Steinfeld seems to think that Dolan's a great guy. And I wonder if Steinfeld's used his connections with the New York Times to try to protect Dolan, basically. So mid-September 2005, I reached out to the New York Times reporters. I think I went to Wilgerin first, and then she bounced me to Goodstein because Goodstein had done the actual reporting in St. Louis. And I asked Goodstein a very simple question, which was, do you believe these guys and what they said about Ballantyne? And she came back to me with a very simple answer, which is, we wouldn't have run the piece if we didn't. And that actually kind of freaked me out. And in retrospect, I think it sent me into kind of a psychological death spiral where I started to get more and more sick. Because as I think about it, that's when I started to descend into mental illness and having anxiety and depression problems. Although I didn't understand it at the time. I mean, I was having lots of problems at work, and work was getting really weird. But, and I again, recently found out that people at work, so I ended up getting laid off in late June 2007. And I recently came to find out that people characterized me as having become catatonic. Catatonic is the word that they use to describe me. So basically, from 2005, you know, September 2005 until June 2007, I cognitively dissolved, became catatonic as a result of, without understanding that this is the Father Ballantyne stuff going on, but it's, you know, it's affecting me, it's dissolving me, but I don't understand what's going on. And the reason I don't understand what's going on, and the reason I don't really I'm not making the connection, is because Timothy Cardinal Dolan, you know, Father Dolan, then Bishop Dolan, now Cardinal Dolan, told me nothing happened. And then Nancy, you know, the woman, the assistance coordinator for the Archdiocese of St. Louis, who I assume was Nancy Brown, she told me nothing happened. So I ended up losing my job in 2007, and I'm very frustrated that I was laid off from the company that was acquired by Equifax, you know, and obviously I'm very frustrated because, you know, people, I didn't, you know, catatonic is a perfectly accurate way to describe how I had, or what I had become. I was having a nervous breakdown, basically. Major productivity problems. I didn't understand what the hell was going on. You know, I was laid off in the middle of the summer, right? Shit, right before the 4th of July, which is a classic pattern for me where I kind of degrade and devolve right before the 4th of July, because the 4th of July is when the worst stuff happened. Sexual assault, that kind of stuff. My parents were out of town. You know, so the weeks leading up to the 4th of July are always the worst time of year for me. No surprise, because that's the anniversary of the worst stuff. But, you know, I'm frustrated. I'm still frustrated that people saw me degrading cognitively, saw me becoming catatonic, and nobody did anything to help. They just laid me off. Yeah, they laid me off with a lot of severance, but you know, why did you just cut me off instead of helping me? That's very frustrating. But anyway. Okay, so back to Steinfeld's Dolan in the New York Times. So in 2011, I went back to the Archdiocese of St. Louis. By this time, I had been working with a psychologist and started to understand and believe that that something had happened to me with Valentine. Because Dolan had sent me on this basically 10-year wild goose chase by telling me that nothing had happened with Valentine, but I had run out of other explanations, and I had come back to Valentine and started looking at my memories, and that was the only thing that really made sense. So I went back to the Archdiocese and basically asked them, "Are you sure these memories of Valentine don't make sense? Because I'm really starting to think they make sense." And again, they said, "No, they don't mean anything. You know, it's all your dad's fault. Your dad's a dick." And while my dad and I had issues, they weren't, they didn't ex they didn't they didn't explain the problems that I was having, the sexual problems, that kind of stuff. But then I started to sense a cover up when it with respect to Dolan, because they told me they had no record of my 2002 conversations with then Bishop, now Cardinal Dolan, or with Nancy Brown. No record of those conversations. So then at some point, it may have been as early as 2011, at least by 2013 or so, I went back to Lori Goodstein at the New York Times, and told her, "Okay, so remember me, I've got this story about Valentine, and I'm starting to think that it isn't just about Valentine, but Dolan is involved in this story in some manner." And I knew that she and the New York Times would be interested in that story because Dolan is a national, if not international, figure. I mean, at a minimum, he's the Archbishop of New York, which is in her backyard, and he's a, you know, so he's a major New York figure, plus he's a national, if not international, figure, plus he's, you know, at the time he was still thought of as being a possible candidate for the first American Pope. He was a, you know, he was a big deal. He still is seen as a big deal in St. Louis, I think. I think most people understand that he's not papable anymore, but I think people in St. Louis still think that Dolan is papable, you know, worthy of consideration for being the Pope. You know, that's what papable means. And people in St. Louis would shit if the first American Pope was from St. Louis, and I think that explains a lot of the dysfunction in St. Louis. But so I went back to Goodstein with this story that expanded upon her 2002 story of Valentine, and didn't just talk about Valentine, but added in all the Dolan stuff. And what blew me away, what is that she wasn't interested in it. And I approached over the years, over the following years, I approached the New York Times multiple times from multiple angles through multiple people with the same story, you know, talking about the misdeeds of Cardinal Dolan, and with new information, new people, new testimony. Dolan knew, Dolan knew, Dolan saw, Dolan knew, Dolan did nothing. you know, with multiple points of corroboration, and very consistently, the New York Times hasn't done anything to even investigate the story. They have all this information, all this evidence that Timothy Cardinal Dolan knew what was going on. It wasn't just that he was there while Valentine was abusing, which is a revelation in and of itself, but I have evidence from myself and two other people that Dolan saw stuff and did nothing. And the New York Times has that, and the New York Times has never investigated that. You know, I have a hard time getting some of this stuff published because the guys I rely on for corroboration, I'm not in great shape, but I'm doing better than some of the other guys. You know, one of the guys has a major drinking problem. One of the guys is dead. Another guy has what seems like a major anxiety problem, and he just can't engage. So I have a hard time getting corroboration on my stories. I understand that. People aren't going to publish a huge, massive allegation off of one person's testimony, off of just my testimony. I understand that. What I don't understand is that the New York Times has never done any digging into my story and has never gotten to the point where they've tried to corroborate and have reached the point where they can't corroborate. They've never even tried to investigate it, much less corroborate it. I've had other outlets that I've been in contact with get to the point of corroborating and have put effort into trying to corroborate and have failed. You know, those are good faith efforts. The New York Times has not even tried to investigate these stories, which is really strange. I've suspected, or I've wondered, if they're using this information for leverage over Dolan. But, you know, I've long known about the Peter Steinfeld's connection to the New York Times. But now I'm starting to wonder. I recently, as in yesterday, learned about the connection between Peter Steinfeld's and Timothy Cardinal Dolan. I didn't realize how close they are. And now I'm starting to wonder if Peter Steinfeld's is using his connections at the New York Times to throw the New York Times off the scent of Timothy Cardinal Dolan. If he's discrediting me somehow, if he's front running ahead of the story. I don't know anything about, you know, Steinfeld's doesn't know me. I don't know anything about him. We've never met. We've never talked. He doesn't know anything about me. He doesn't know anything about my story, you know, other than what he's read. But I'm starting to wonder if Steinfeld's is, you know, if he is spoiling the water, front running, and keeping the New York Times from investigating the misdeeds of Timothy Cardinal Dolan at the Church of the Immaculata in Richmond Heights, a suburb of St. Louis. And that would explain the Peter Steinfeld's piece in Commonweal magazine from roughly a year ago, which I found really, really bizarre. Because, I mean, Steinfeld's makes the classic mistake of taking the church at its word, especially in terms of the response of the hierarchy to the abuse crisis and to the treatment of survivors. And the fact is, you cannot, I mean, this is just basic, you know, big institution 101. You can't take an institution at its word. Yeah, they have all these policies and procedures, but you have to talk to the whistleblowers to see how those policies and procedures are actually implemented. And it's very obvious that Peter Steinfeld's has never talked to a survivor. Instead, he's simply reading out of the manual and just seeing what the manual says, that here's what the Catholic Church does in terms of survivors. And Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt, you know, to bring him into this, that's exactly what Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt is also doing. In his report that he published a week and a half ago, you know, one of, you know, about half of his appendix is basically just quoting the Catholic Church and just literally just copying all their policies and procedures and all the stuff that they say, all their blah, blah, blah about here's what we do for survivors and assistance coordinators and blah, blah, blah. But he, you know, the fact is that all the assistance coordinator stuff, at least in the Archdiocese of St. Louis, it's all bullshit. It's all crap. It's just PR. There's no there. The fact is that the assistance coordinator program in the Archdiocese of St. Louis is a list of names of psychologists. And if you don't have a psychologist, the Archdiocese of St. Louis will give you the name of a psychologist. And that is the extent of the assistance that the Archdiocese of St. Louis and the assistance coordinator for the Archdiocese of St. Louis will give to survivors. No money, no treatment, no assistance, nothing, no support. It's just a list of names. You know, you're on your own. You got to pay for it yourself. You know, finding the name of a psychologist is not the hard part of being a survivor. It's a complete and total joke. And, you know, Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt has made the quote unquote mistake of taking the church at its word. And it seems that Peter Steinfels has made the mistake of taking the church at its word. And I can only assume that, like Eric Schmidt, Peter Steinfels is a devout Catholic who wants to believe that his church, the Catholic Church, is in this for the right reasons, is in this for the good, is doing the right thing. And the fact is that it's not. The Catholic Church, at some point in time, just absolutely went off the rails. There's this guy called Satan. I know it's not popular to talk about Satan, but the fact is that Satan is a real force. Whether he's a person or a force or an entity or an inclination, it doesn't really matter. Satan is real. And Satan has his talons in the Catholic Church. And while Peter Steinfels doesn't want Satan to be real, the fact is that Satan has Timothy Cardinal Dolan in his grasp. He has the Catholic Church in his grasp. Not the whole of it, but the hierarchy. The hierarchy of the Catholic Church is very firmly and horrifyingly in the grasp of Satan. And it's absolutely horrifying. But the confirmation of that is the pressure that's being put on survivors to just shut up and to move on. And the event that's happening later today at Notre Dame is just absolute proof of that.